member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of July, Anno Domini 2014. Yes, that's right. We're about halfway through the year. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Microsoft is stepping up its warnings for approaching support deadlines for some of its key products, including Windows 7. A few definitions worth knowing. Mainstream support is the typically five-year period when Microsoft provides free patches and fixes, including but not limited to security updates for its products. When a product exits the mainstream support phase, Microsoft continues to provide a period, also often 5 years, of extended support, which means users get free security fixes, but other types of updates are paid and require specific licensing deals. End of support means there will be no more fixes or patches, paid or free, security or non-security, coming for specific products. There are some temporary workarounds, as Windows XP users have discovered, but as a general rule, end of support means, for the most intents and purposes, the end of support. Mainstream free support is ending on January 13th for a number of major Microsoft products, including all versions of Windows 7, that's Enterprise, Home Basic, Home Premium, Premium Ultimate, and Starter. Extended support for Windows 7 and lasts until January 14th, 2020, so users can expect to continue to receive free security updates, but not feature updates for Windows 7 until that point. For those running Windows 7 with Service Pack 1 applied, the end of mainstream and extended support dates are the same, January 13th, 2015, and January 14th, 2020, respectively, given that there is no Windows 7 SP2. Mainstream support also ends on January 13th for all versions of Windows Server 2008 and 2008 R2, all editions of Windows Storage Server 2008. Mainstream support for Dynamics C5 2010, NAV 2009, and NAV 2009 R2 ends on January 13th as well. Support for Office 2010 with Service Pack 1, pay attention, ends this October 14th, as does support for SharePoint 2010 with Service Pack 1. Support also is ending for Forefront United Access Gateway 2010 with Service Pack 3 and Visual Studio 2012 Remote Tools, Test Professional, and Express for Web, Windows 8, and Windows Desktop. Customers should migrate to the next available service pack to continue receiving security updates and be eligible for other support options for those service pack releases. Windows Phone 7.8 mainstream support also is ending soon, this September 14th. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is Windows 7 is reaching end of life. And your choices are, what? I just installed it. And dang, I was this close to getting off of XP. I'm rocking Windows 8 now, and Windows? Meh. So far, we've got about 24 votes, and what I just installed it is first, followed very closely by Windows. Meh. And I know you'll have a lot more to say about this, particularly if you're venting your frustration at having just installed it. So if you look down the right-hand side of the column under the right-hand column of the page, under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. If you select that, you will see a bunch of different forums, starting with show discussion and then poll discussion. Under poll discussion, the first choice there is 12 July 14. Windows 7 is reaching end of life. And if you go in there, you can read what other people have said and add your own stuff to it. And of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. 1.15.
What's also kind of interesting is that Windows Vista mainstream support ended April 10th, 2012. Nobody noticed.
Nobody noticed.
Did anybody care?
And Steve has a... there it is, life cycle fact sheet. Microsoft has a life cycle fact sheet which they update fairly regularly. So if you'd like to know when your favorite product went off life cycle support, you can see it there.
What I'd be interested to see is how many times did they extend Windows XP's mainstream support because everyone hated Vista.
Yep.
So will they extend 7? Because most people just did get to 7, and everyone hates 8.
Well, 98 got extended extensively. Even while Windows ME was on the shelf, they were pulling ME, and restocking it with Windows 98.
Right.
And they were saying, well, that's coming to the end of life. Well, no, it's not. They're restocking it because, ME, and everybody out there that knows Soundbites very well knows how much I enjoyed ME.
Yes. Yeah, it's the every other cycle. Every other Windows OS has been crap, and everyone has skipped it.
Right.
And so there's a lot of hope for Windows 9.
That's the way it used to be. Now, for us, we'll remember, but a lot of our listeners won't, the versions of DOS.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, if you're one of those people who installed Windows 7 early, the RTM release to manufacturing, and never entered any service packs, you were done a year ago, year and a half ago. If you have Windows 7, the real release, with Service Pack 1, you've got until January 13th of 2015, next year.
Six months.
Pay attention. If you're looking at the sheet that Steve put a link to, there's an end of mainstream support column and an end of extended support column. Unless you are paying Microsoft to keep your system up to date, unless you are paying Microsoft, you are on mainstream support. Companies can pay Microsoft an exorbitant amount of money to remain on Windows 7, and they'll get another 5 years of support. But if they are not paying, or you personally are not paying, and believe me, your wallet would know it if you were paying because it ain't cheap, you are on mainstream support, and your support for Windows 7 ends January 13th, 2015. That means you will still get security updates for 5 more years, but nothing else. If there's something that doesn't work in Windows 7, they aren't going to fix it. If there's something they add to Windows 7, you don't get it. So starting in January 13th of 2015, if you call us up and say there's an issue with the way Windows don't move correctly, we will say to you, that's right, because support for that has ended and you don't get the fix. So if you are on Windows 7, this is one more way you get forced to move to Windows 8 or to a Mac or to Linux. Those are your choices at this point. There is no other choice.
Well, there's the I suppose I can say it. There's the stupid choice of living dangerously and staying where you are.
Yes, yes, yes. That is your choice. It's what we call risk management. You manage the risk. And if you decide it's worth the risk to continue using an unsupported operating system, that's your business. And as we know, there are many people who are still on XP.
We were wondering, before XP support officially ended, how many new exploits would come out because the bad guys knew Microsoft stopped supporting it. In less than a month after XP support ended, a new exploit came out, and Microsoft said, okay, one-time fix because we just ended support.
Right.
And since then, several new exploits have come out and are not being fixed.
And that's going to be, we believe, the same issue with Windows 7. January 13th is the end of mainstream support. So by the middle of February, we should be seeing quite a number of exploits come out against Windows 7. Because what will happen is, and here's the interesting part, Microsoft still will issue monthly fixes for Windows 7, but they will go to only the people who are paying for extended support.
The large corporations who generally don't want to change OSs because there's a huge cost involved in making sure their own software works.
Right. So what the bad guys do is they buy the extended support, and then anything they get that is not strictly a security fix, they can now write exploits against because Microsoft just showed them where the problems are.
Yeah, we talk about Microsoft's Patch Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, is Microsoft's scheduled release date. And by Thursday, the exploits have come out to attack the vulnerabilities that Microsoft just told everybody about.
Right.
And the bad guys know that a lot of people won't get around to installing them, if ever.
Right.
So how many, you know, how many servers in the closet are still running XP?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it runs. It's a good product. It was solid, and that's what they based 7 off of.
Right.
I mean, they did a lot of the from the ground back up work to get 7 up and be as efficient as it was. Because, I mean, very few holes or problems arose from Windows 7.
Right.
I mean, for the most part, you got it out of the box, and people were not complaining about it. They loved it. It was the same look and feel, unlike Windows 8.
Right. Well, and speaking of Windows 8, it looks like Windows 8 point, whatever the next one is going to be called, will be coming out fairly soon. But it also is starting to look like the return to the full start menu won't happen until Windows 9.
Which is due out this fall for beta.
Beta.
Yeah, beta.
And that means a minimum of 6 months before we see it live for real.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to have at least 3 or 4 months of complete vulnerability on Windows 7 if you intend to skip Windows 8.
I think I don't think Windows 9 is going to take that long for beta. Because between me, you, and the lamppost, you heard it. Remember me now, and, you know.
Yeah.
That type of stuff.
You hear it now, remember me later.
Thank you.
But,
you know, I think for the most part, what they're doing is just correcting the issue that they didn't give folks with Windows 8. And that's when you first go to do an install, or say you're getting a prepackaged one. And you turn it on for the first time. You went over to wherever, brought that big box, brought it home, set it up. And you're installing Windows 9 for the first time. It's going to ask you, do you want the new tablet look or do you want the old Windows look?
Right.
They're smart if they do that, and this way they can make it for the holidays.
I remember that back in the was it Windows 3 versus NT days? They asked you which one you wanted.
Yes. And and again, this is just me sounding off the wall, but if I was a business person, I definitely want to rush that out to get my market sales up for the holidays.
Right.
Because they took a huge bath right now with Windows 8. A lot of folks said, hell no, I don't want it.
That's right.
Major corporations didn't want it because nobody wants a tablet on their desktop and a whole learning curve.
Right.
In today's business, they can't afford it.
I do my column in the newspaper every week, and I can't tell you how many questions I get. And I certainly don't answer them all because the answer is all the same. How many questions I get that are, I just got Windows 8 on a laptop or a desktop. I don't know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to go to do what to do. That's also true of people on tablets.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of really cool things you can do, and they did a really nice job on some things. The problem is that they don't tell you about them.
Yep.
So swiping left, swiping right, swiping down, swiping up.
You can swipe till the cows come home.
To the right corners, to the left corners. They all do different things, but Microsoft doesn't tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't also tell you the charms menu. What the living heck is the charms menu? Well, if you take your mouse pointer and stick it in the lower right corner, out pops a little thing with settings and a couple of other things. That's the charms menu.
Ooh.
So you call Microsoft and they say, open up the charms menu.
What?
Or if you're on a tablet, you swipe from the right corner. Just swipe in from the right corner. But they don't tell you these things.
Yeah, Apple has the same issue. Their iPad comes with a card that tells you how to pinch and zoom and swipe, and gives you the URL for the full manual.
Right.
And they claim they're being environmentally responsible by not including a printed manual.
Yeah. It costs an extra 40 cents.
No one ever reads that card. No one ever understands that they can get to the full manual. So we carry a line of paper books from Peach Pit Press, and because some people need to have that paper book, here's how you do something. You can get the electronic book in your tablet, but you have to know how to get electronic books in your tablet first.
What you ought to do is copy that page and charge a buck for the copy.
Yeah. Instead of being a little tiny card, blow it up to full screen. Yes. Yeah, full 8x10, yeah.
Yeah.
And then according to Net Market Share, the latest results from June 2014, Windows XP still has a 25% installed use. And Windows 8 and 8.1 together are 12%.
Wow. What's the 50%?
Windows 7.
Okay. Wow. And
Windows Vista is at 3%.
Oops.
Well, there are a lot of old servers sitting around.
Yeah. In the closet. They work fine. I don't want to screw with them because it's working.
Yep. And I believe me when I tell you I understand that. Listen, we're going to take a break, but you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And our first caller is Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's up?
Hi. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I have a 17-inch monitor that I got rid of, and I've got a 24-inch monitor now. I believe I called you guys several weeks ago. I have my computer moved, and I had Staples put in a wireless card. Everything is set up in my living room now. Thanks for the suggestions.
Good.
And I've got a 24-inch monitor, but when I go to a website, let's see how I explain this. I go on a website, the whole page is there, but in one corner of the page are the words.
Yep.
In other words, it hasn't filled up the whole page. If I hit F11, it does. But how do I do this permanently?
It's not you, it's the other end. When companies design websites, they don't design them for giant monitors yet.
Okay.
Because a lot of people have smaller monitors. So you can zoom the website to fill your screen, and that must be what the F11 key is doing for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, what it is.
There may be a preference. What browser are you using?
Chrome.
There may be a preference in there to always zoom.
What operating system are you on?
Windows 7.
Uh-huh. What is the save command? Is that F...
Three? F5.
F5?
On the desktop saves your window position.
Well, that's it. If you were to... Now, when you see Chrome on the screen, right? Not the window you're in, but the whole... not the page you're on, but the whole window of Chrome, right?
Yeah, I think I understand you.
Right, with the blue bar across the top and the close and open buttons and all of that.
As I said, I brought my computer over to Staples.
All right, no, Linda.
From 4 gigs to 8 gigs.
Okay, I'm sorry, Linda. I'm going to talk. Here's what I'm asking. On the screen, as it stands right now, is the window that Chrome is in filling the entire screen, or are the open and close buttons off on the side a little bit?
No, I think I understand what you're saying. It's filling the... I've got a learning disability, so I'm trying to understand. Let me start this. When I go into Google search, it fills the whole screen. Google fills the whole screen.
Okay, good.
Okay, now I go to my banking website, ESL.
Yes.
I get the whole screen, but the words are only on one quarter of the page.
Yeah. Right.
That's the other end.
Right. Yeah. What's happened is when people create a website, they can either create it to completely fill the screen, or they can create it to only be so wide.
Or they can center it. It looks like Google's homepage is set to center on whatever your window
right.
is.
So, for example, if you were to go to the Soundbites page, you might not see anything way over on the right.
Okay.
Depending on how big your monitor is.
Or the Soundbites icon on the left gets cut off, too.
Yeah, right. I've got a 24-inch monitor. I went right. from 17 to 24.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you've now got more space, which may not be filled up by some websites. Some websites may have decided, you know what, most of our people only have screens so big, so we'll make sure that everything we write fits on that screen. The other thing you can do in Chrome is if you look in the upper right corner, you see those three bars, three black bars, one on top of the other?
Well, I'm not near my computer right now, okay. but I'll listen to the podcast later.
Right.
Okay.
There's
go ahead.
Three bars in the upper right corner. If you click on them, it drops down a menu that starts with new tab, new window, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Somewhere in the middle of that drop-down menu is Zoom.
Okay.
And if that's not at 100%, you can hit the plus and minus buttons until you get to 100%. And that may make it bigger.
I did that. Somebody told me to do that. I did that, but...
That only works for the one window you're on
exactly.
right at the moment. Right.
But, if you go I'm finding, and if I have to, I will, I'm finding when I go to a website, if I just hit F11, it fills the whole thing.
Right, because that's a super zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah. If, so, I mean, let me see if I understand. So there's really no permanent way to do this?
Sort
of. Would I have to hit F11 all the time?
You can go into Settings, and then Advanced Settings, and then Web Content, and you can set the default page zoom to, say, 150% or 175%.
Okay, Settings on what? Chrome?
In Chrome, yep.
Okay.
Right, if you go into Settings on Chrome, and again, that's that three-bar menu thing in the corner.
Okay.
Down near the bottom, it says Settings. One of the nice things you can do is up at the top, it says Settings. And if
okay.
you look over to the right, you can search Settings. So if you just type Zoom into there, it brings up Privacy. Hit the Content Settings button.
Okay.
And scroll down until you see...
Mine went right to page zoom.
Oh, right to page zoom. So if you're... Right, and it may be a little different on the Chromebook, so... But you can... When you get to page zoom, you can select 100% as the standard that you usually zoom to. If you don't like 100%, you can set it to 150% or 80% or whatever makes you happy. But start at 100 to see what happens.
The problem there is if you go to a website that is designed for a bigger screen, everything will be too big.
Right, right, right. So you the best thing to do is to set it to 100%
mm-hmm.
and see if that makes you happy.
And use that F11 when you need to.
Okay. Nick, I got my iPhone.
Oh, wonderful. I'll give you a call.
Yeah, I've got your phone number, so why don't I call you?
Perfect.
And, you know, and let you know.
Well, let's not go into detail here, Linda.
No, but I'm saying I'll email you
Perfect.
With instructions.
Perfect. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys, because I thought to myself, what the heck is going on
yeah.
here?
Yeah, yeah.
One other thing. Remember I told you I had a Windows 8 laptop?
Yeah.
I no longer have a Windows 8 laptop. I went to Newegg, thanks for the information, and I purchased Windows 7 Home Premium. Staples put it on my laptop, so my laptop is now Windows 7.
Good for you.
Nice.
Make
sure you get Service Pack 1.
Yep.
Yeah, well, but I'll tell you, that is a lot easier. I understand it a lot easier.
Well, and that's just it. Everybody understands Windows 7
yeah.
because it's like Windows XP and everything
it
else.
It goes right back to Windows 3.1.
What drove me crazy with Windows 8 was those stupid little blocks.
Yep.
That drove me crazy.
You and everybody else, Linda.
Mm-hmm.
So trust me, you're way better off with 7. Thank
yep.
you so much.
Well, that's one.
Looking forward to hearing from you.
That was the one contention. You know, it's a major learning curve, and that's why big businesses have refused to switch over because they can't afford the expense of retraining every person. I don't care how much of a Windows expert you are. It's going to take you a good week or better in your busy work schedule trying to find where everything is.
When you don't have anything else to do.
Right, yeah. Exactly. How many businesses can take a week, tell every department, take a week off?
Yeah.
Yep.
And even when they come back, they're going to be less productive.
Exactly.
Than they were the week before on Windows 6 or 7 or whatever.
Because the flow is just still not going to be the same.
Yeah. Right. So people don't want it.
Yep. And with the web page window sizes, if you've been in the computer world for a few decades, you'll remember the switch from 13 to 15 to 17 to 19, and everyone getting these brand new 17-inch monitors, and websites are still designed for 13-inch. And nothing fits.
640 by 480.
Yep. How about
now, according to
Wait a minute. How about the original VGA?
Yep.
320.
When we came out from monochrome to VGA, and it was pixels, you know, all over the place. But ooh, I got color.
Color. Yeah.
320 by 16
colors.
I think it was.
Yes.
Yep.
16 full colors. If you had a Hercules, well, never mind. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, that's when my PC Junior went up to 32.
I know you won on the PC
Junior. Oh, that Junior was a sweet.
So, I loved the PC Junior.
That was, you know, that still brings a smile to my face because I can still remember Lori's face because I was getting ready to send her off to England and for one of her audit trips, and I had the whole Junior apart on our dining room table, and we had just purchased it. We had just purchased. She goes, "What the heck are you doing?" Upgrades.
Yeah, right.
She goes, "I don't want to know. I got to go. Good luck. If you break it, too bad."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, I'll fix it."
Well, according to Global Stats StatCounter, in the month of June, the most common web screen resolution was 1366 by 768.
Yep.
Followed the second most, but about half the size, is 1920 by 1080. More and more people are now getting 1920 by 1080 full HD screens. That's probably what Linda's 24 inches.
Mm-hmm. And that 1366?
That's
a lot of that?
That's 720p. Yeah, the Chromebook and the MacBook Air.
Yep, both the same thing.
Yeah.
And like we've said before, the top 10 selling laptops on Amazon are Chromebooks. Yep. So a significant portion of that is.
But I'm interested by this other, which is 22%. Because all of the graphs they list, 1024 by 768, 768 by 1024, if you got your screen sideways, all of the other resolutions they support there are just so common. Why are 22% of people using something
mobile
other? No, this excludes mobile.
It excludes mobile.
Yeah, that's one of the choices. I've excluded mobile. Although tablet, let me exclude
maybe
tablet.
Maybe it's 800 by 600?
Tablet and console.
Some folks still like things because of their eyesight. Still like big. They don't like the 640.
Well, the problem there
is 800 by 600 is not quite as big, and the icons aren't as small as 1024 by 768 or the others. Granted, you get more on the screen.
The problem with that on the LCD screens is if you lower the resolution to make the text look bigger, everything gets fuzzier because the dots, the LCD dots, are a single size and they can't change.
And that's where you're better off using the zoom.
Right. You can make your text bigger. You can zoom in on web pages and make your icons bigger, but still keep it at what we call the native resolution of the monitor, so everything is sharp and crisp. And then make things bigger so that they look easier. When a customer brings in a machine that the resolution is off, it just hurts my eyes. It is so fuzzy. How do they know? How can they look at that all the time?
I know, but they're sacrificing clarity for being able to read it at all.
Yeah.
And I do understand that, but you're right.
So if I take my glasses off, I can't read my screen right now.
Right.
I can see the pretty colors.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I like. I have a, this is a zoom. Toshiba Chromebook. It's 13.3 inches. I have an HP Chromebook that's 14 inches. Mm-hmm. I have the original one that I actually bought as opposed to one was an 11-inch Chromebook. I really don't use it much because it's just kind of a little small for my aging eyes.
I've zoomed my screen in as far as I can, and it's still fuzzy without my glasses.
Yeah. Well, that's when you use one of those magnifier.
Yeah. So programs. Yeah. So in most cases, especially on a website, you can make your text bigger and smaller. On the Mac, it's Command Plus and Command Minus.
Right.
I'm sure there's a similar keystroke for Windows.
Pretty much the same.
Probably
actually.
Alt Plus and Alt Minus.
No, it's Control Plus and Control Minus
makes the text bigger or smaller.
And, right, then, and Control Zero, no, I guess not. I don't know.
Yeah, on the Mac, Command Zero takes it to actual size, which is what the other end set. But yeah, and most of the operating systems have a zoom feature where you get like a magnifying glass and can zoom up on everything.
Yeah, well, Windows 7's got that built-in magnifier that you can turn that on, and you know, for folks with visual impairment.
Yep.
You know, it makes their life a little bit easier. Like you say, with folks, well, like my dad, he used to love to read. And we wound up, he had a little nook. And we wound up, one of the other features there is make the text bigger. You know, and a lot more of that's being added on to a lot of the devices to make it easier for other folks with don't have long arms.
Right. That's exactly right.
Don't want to admit, you know, yeah, they need glasses.
Right. And I just did the same thing. I zoomed, I changed the actual resolution, and it's fuzzy.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get to you very shortly. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Get sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Kate from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Kate. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No problem at all. Kate, hey. I'll respond to either.
As long as we don't call you late for dinner.
Okay, sounds good. Okay. I have a question. We recently got a Blu-ray player. It's a Sony. And, you know, we hooked it up to our Wi-Fi network and everything, and we're able to get to YouTube and, you know, a whole bunch of other, like, video-type websites, but for some reason, this one particular website, which was one of the ones that we wanted to watch a lot more frequently, needs to have Flash installed, and in order for the website to work, and this browser, whatever it is, doesn't seem to support Flash.
Right. Very few mobile devices support Flash. I doubt any Blu-ray player would support Flash. And in fact, Adobe is sort of deprecating Flash and moving to other technologies.
Mm-hmm.
There is what looks like a proxy server. Cause we run into the same problem in iPhones and iPads that don't have Flash also. And one of the things you can do is go to a different website that transcodes the Flash into something else.
Okay.
And then displays that.
Okay.
HTML5 is one of the replacements for Flash.
HTML5?
Yeah.
Where would I find that?
Well, there are. I'm on Sony's website right now. There are several other websites that will transcode the Flash for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find out. They keep saying there are several websites, but they don't say which one to go to.
Yeah.
But the short answer is you can't display
gotcha.
Flash on the Blu-ray.
Right.
Do you happen to know the model number of your Blu-ray player?
I do. It is, let's see, Sony... B as in boy, D as in dog, P as in Peter, - B as in boy, X-ray 320.
Okay. There may be an update to the firmware that provides Flash, but short of that, one of those proxy servers, and we're both frantically looking stuff up right now.
Thank you.
A lot of times what you can do instead is to use a phone or a tablet to go to an app that plays and then mirror that to your television instead of using the Blu-ray player.
Yeah, we tried to do the mirroring, but for some reason the mirroring didn't work, and I didn't know if it was because we didn't have the mirroring. Is there a mirroring app we need to install on the phone or tablet?
Sometimes.
Okay, because I think this says something about Miracast. Is that?
Yeah, that's one of the apps that will let you mirror to another device.
So we would have to install the Miracast on the phone or the tablet.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. This is all new to us, so I'm writing notes. Let's see.
Right,
so.
But if you're going to do something along the lines of Miracast, then the Sony Blu-ray player already supports it, then all you have to do is install it on your phone or tablet, and then connect them, and there will be documentation on how to do that on the Miracast website.
Okay, cool.
And that's one of the reasons why use of Flash is falling is that hundreds of millions of mobile devices, phones and tablets, don't support Flash at all.
Right.
So many websites that require Flash are switching to HTML5, or they're writing their own app for iOS or Android that you can install an app on your phone instead of using the web page.
Right. Gotcha.
Now, do you have a Google phone or tablet or an Apple phone or tablet?
It's Android.
Android. Miracast does exist for it. I have never installed it myself, but I know it exists.
Okay, cool. All righty. Yeah, I wasn't sure exactly what the steps were because the manual is basically almost non-existent. It's a few pages.
Well,
it is a paper one, but...
Yeah, yeah. I had a Sony Blu-ray player until the... HDMI connector died.
Oh.
It really made me angry, actually.
Huh.
So there's Streamcast and Easycast and half a dozen other things in the apps in the web store, in the Google Play Store.
Right. Gotcha.
So, read up on them, figure which one makes you happy.
Gotcha.
There may be a direct Miracast.
Or you get a different device, like a Chromecast or an Apple TV. Well, if you've got Android, probably the Chromecast would be the least expensive. And then, again, instead of using the Blu-ray player, you would mirror it from your phone. And Google intentionally uses that as a feature of the Chromecast.
Right.
And I don't know what Chromecast is.
It's a little set-top box. It's $35. Mm-hmm. Plugs into an HDMI port, and it gives you Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, and then it will mirror everything on your Android phone or even your iDevice too.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Right.
Because this player, I mean, it says, we support Netflix and YouTube and Hulu and all that. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. So it should work.
Yeah, I've got like a dozen devices in my house that I can get Netflix on.
Right. Yeah.
That seems to be the big one.
As long as I can get Netflix, I'm happy, right.
Which is weird because Netflix uses Silverlight, which is a different internet video technology from Microsoft.
Right, but it's there. And like Steve said, the Chromecast is only $35, but it also does not do Flash. But again, because you can just mirror your tablet or whatever to it. But try, the app is free. So try downloading any one of the Miracast apps from the Chrome store, including Chromecast itself.
Oh, okay.
And give it a try. If you can make the connection and show stuff, you're done.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Sure.
Appreciate your help.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Excuse me. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, we're seeing that a lot with the set-top boxes and getting websites on your television is that some of the extra plugins, and especially Flash, don't work. So another option would be to plug your computer into your TV with a wire, and then you display it on the computer, and the TV is just a second monitor.
Right.
And, but that's annoying.
Well, right. But part of that is because if you are using Flash on any of your devices, you know they update it like every other hour. Because they are constantly finding holes in it.
Didn't you have a news story? There was a critical Flash update this week.
Yeah, there was one this week, too. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call, and keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you.
Listen, I have a daughter that's going to start MCC this September.
Yep.
And I'm going to have to get her a laptop. Doing a little shopping in the stores. I'm not going to mention the store, but they were trying to push this Google Chrome, Google Notebook or something.
The Chromebook, yeah.
What do you think of that?
I'm using one right now, and I absolutely love it. But that does not necessarily mean it's for everybody.
Okay.
It depends on what it is you do. So, if, for example, your daughter is going to be essentially living out of her web browser, then the Chromebook is perfect for that because it essentially is a web browser in a box. So I can do word processing and email and spreadsheets and presentations like PowerPoint and all kinds of things out of here. But those work for me. If she's in an area where she needs specific software that runs on only Windows or only the Mac, then a Chromebook is not going to help her because it doesn't run either Windows or the Mac operating system. It's a completely separate device.
And one of Chromebook's biggest advantages is it's much less expensive than a Windows or Mac laptop.
Right.
Right. That's why they were pushing it, you know.
Yeah. Right. And I am an adjunct professor at MCC. I have brought my Chromebook in regularly. It works perfectly. But again, like I said, it's more dependent on what it is she's going to do.
Yeah, do you know what she's going to be studying?
Well, right now it's going to be liberal arts at this time.
Right. But so here's the thing. If she can go to her whatever desktop or laptop she has now and if she's got the Chrome browser,
she does. She loves it.
Loves it. Then if she can spend her entire day in the Chrome browser, whether it's with some add-ons or going to specific websites to do word processing or whatever, and she can get through an entire day doing that, then a Chromebook would be fine for her. But if she needs specialized programs, for example, if she must use Microsoft Office, or she must use the video software or
Photoshop
or any of those things, then she really will need a Mac or a Windows laptop.
Yeah, well, kind of confusing, but
well, yes, and that's part of it. The like I said, I spend a good 80% of my day on my Chromebook.
It's
and
kind
then
of,
when I'm at home, that's the other thing. Hold on a second. That's the other thing. Because you can get Google Drive, which has word processing and spreadsheet and presentation package, I can go through a day. When I was taking classes, when I was getting my master's degree, I would go through an entire day with my Chromebook, which, by the way, has a 9-hour battery life, and take notes all day long. And then if there was something I absolutely had to use a real computer for, I have a desktop at home.
Right.
So I couldn't do that at in the school environment, but I could do that at home.
The other thing I noticed with these Chromebooks is the hard drive space. It's not that big.
No, it's not designed to be that big, but almost all of them have an SD card in the side, and you can get 128 gig of SD card. So one of the things that I do is I load up my SD card. If I'm going on a trip, I load up a couple of SD cards with movies, or I load up an SD card with a bucket load of music, and I've got more than enough to last me days and days and days. So while there isn't a lot of built-in storage, because you've got that SD card, you're essentially unlimited in the amount of storage you can have.
And you also get 100 gigabytes of storage on the Google Google Cloud.
Right.
And because documents, you know, WordPressing documents are relatively small, you can fit a whole lot of documents in that space you do get.
Well, but and don't forget, if you actually write those documents in Google Drive,
they don't count.
The space doesn't count.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay, because, boy, they were like 16, and the biggest one was like 32. I'm going, you got to be kidding me.
Right, but you get 100 gig online. Now, it does mean that you mostly have to be online. There is an offline mode. For example, the other day I was doing some writing in a coffee shop, and they lost their network connection, and I didn't even notice. It switched instantly over to offline mode. I did a bunch of writing. When it came back on, it synchronized all over again. So all the stuff I've been writing went right up to the cloud. I honestly would not have noticed if there hadn't been other people starting to swear all over the cafe because they'd lost their network connection. So you can set it up to be whatever you need it to be. Whenever you need it to be. But again, I'm not saying it's good for everybody.
If she's doing video editing or photo editing or moving into something like that, she needs more computer. It's kind of the same thing with cars. If all you're doing is driving across the street to Wegmans, a Smart's fine. But if you're going to race at Le Mans, you need a Lamborghini or Ferrari.
That's exactly right. I hope that helped.
It was just new to me, and I tell you, this one salesman was really pushing this thing, and I was just not familiar with it. You know, they make everything sound like it's, you know, the greatest thing ever. But
well, right, and it is if you can use it that way.
Yeah.
Right. All right, we have to take a break. Thank you, Ray. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 59 minutes after the hour. We'll be back for a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You've only been through an hour of this nonsense. You have a whole nother hour to go. So just sit there and be... I'm sorry, I mean, we hope that you will be back again.
You are too much.
I'm trying to be polite. I'm retired. I don't care anymore. I'm retired, everybody. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great... And I seriously mean this, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, here's a serious attack involving a widely used web communication format is exposing millions of end users' authentication credentials on sites including eBay, Tumblr, and Instagram. The exploit, which stems from the ease of embedding malicious commands into Adobe Flash files before they're executed, has been largely mitigated by a Flash security update that Adobe reached Tuesday morning to coincide with the technical analysis of the threat, including proof-of-concept exploit code. It will take days or weeks for a meaningful percentage of end users to install the fix. So the researcher who wrote the advisory is warning engineers at large websites to make server-side changes that will minimize the damage of attackers. eBay, Tumblr, Instagram, and OLARC are known to be vulnerable to this attack. Now, we do know that both Tumblr and OLARC say their sites have been patched. But this is not a fix that you can make. It's a fix that must be made by the website. So I would stay off of eBay and Instagram for a few more days, or if you absolutely must be on eBay and Instagram, next week change your passwords.
One of the things we've also seen a lot of people doing is either uninstalling Flash completely and then just not using websites that use Flash.
Right.
Or
that's me, by the way.
Yep. There are plugins available. Click to Flash is a common one. That it will not load Flash on a website unless you click on the page that you want it to load. And in fact, Apple has done in Safari under Mavericks, it won't load Flash unless you click the icon to load it. So it's they're trying to mitigate the problem because Flash gets updated so often and is so vulnerable. Most browsers will block the Flash plugin if right. it gets more than a week old from an update. And so we just got a call about that this morning at our shop. They're going to a website and it says blocked plugin. It's because your Flash hasn't been updated. Usually if you click on that message, it will tell you how to update it. Go right. to the Adobe website. But the bad guys know that, and there's fake Flash updates. So just don't friends don't let friends use Flash.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or what's interesting is the Chrome web browser has Flash built in, and Google updates it automatically for you.
Right.
But there's that overlap between when an exploit is found and when the update comes out.
Right.
So just don't use Flash.
Right. I block Flash myself. All right, our next caller is Earl from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Earl. What's up?
Hi. I installed Windows 8.1 on top of Windows 8, had Dell walk me through it. Then we contacted Norton to get Norton 360 because that was what my wife likes to use. In the process of installing Norton 360, first of all, they had a hard time, and eventually they got it. But I noticed that he deleted what's his name there? The Dr. Watson. And I'm, you know, is that something? Obviously, that installed with Windows 8 or 8.1. But now Dr. Watson is now gone.
Oh,
It's a debugger for Windows.
Okay.
So generally, if you're writing your own software, you probably didn't need it.
Yeah, you probably don't need it anyways.
But why would they uninstall it?
Probably because it's now... I'm sorry, I cannot hear you.
He's cutting out.
But at any rate, the Dr. Watson is a debugger that you can install in Windows, and it probably is simply no longer necessary.
Yeah, matter of fact, Watson has been there since Windows, I believe, 98.
Yeah.
Goes back to Windows 98, and that's all it was a debugger, and very seldom used. So why have it taking up space on your machine?
All right. Well, that's fine. We have more space.
Yep.
All right, so thank you.
Thank you. I hardly could understand him. I apologize.
Yeah, no, it's...
I couldn't hear him well
it's
at
just
all.
It is a utility that back in the day was very useful, but now it has outlived its use. And again, it's Microsoft, so it's probably not even supported that well or updated.
Well, it is included in Windows 7. It's been renamed. They keep renaming the .exe file.
Right, so if you update it from 7 to 8, it's probably still there, but doesn't work in 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons they deleted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not hear if he updated from 7.
Yes.
So if he did, then that's exactly the thing.
That's right. Yeah, he went to 8.1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Like I said, unfortunately, I could not hear him well at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably exactly why they did it. It's just not necessary anymore. And if he did try to run it, it would give false messages.
I can't remember ever using it.
I remember using it once or twice just because it was there and I wanted to see what it did.
Oh, okay.
But it's a Microsoft debugger. It's not that useful.
That's what generates the dump file when Windows crashes.
Right.
I'm reading about it on Wikipedia. There are concerns that the NSA reads that dump file.
Right. But it's likely.
It? Yeah.
It's likely there's either something else they use in Windows 8 or
they've renamed it to Windows Error Reporting, WER.
Right.
And in Windows 8, it's encrypted with TLS, so the NSA can't get to it.
Right. And so if you still have Watson on your machine, it's not only redundant, but also not a good thing to leave there.
Mm-hmm.
So that would explain that.
Yeah.
That's why they deleted it. Makes sense to me.
I wonder if they got approached by the Sherlock Holmes estate after all these years.
Dr.
Watson. You've got to pay us.
The grandchildren are fairly aggressive
yeah.
about that. They're making their money off of Grandpa, and mm-hmm. they're getting fairly aggressive about that.
If you don't defend your trademark, you lose it.
That's exactly true. Well, and that's what causes so much trouble for Disney. I actually feel sorry for Disney.
Yeah.
Because they have, in order to keep a trademark, you must defend it. And so if a nursery school puts paints Disney characters on their walls, if Disney does not sue them,
they're in trouble.
Disney loses the copyright to those characters.
Mm-hmm.
So they end up being the bad guys all the time.
Yeah. And how many nurseries, you know, you've got great artists that have gone in there, and I've seen them, you know, paint murals, Disney character murals on walls, and they're beautiful pieces of artwork.
Yep.
But the sad thing is they're violating it.
What's sort of interesting is every time copyright law is about to expire for Mickey Mouse, because he's one of the oldest characters, Disney gets the law changed.
Yeah.
So right now, copyright lasts for 75 years after the death of the copyright holder.
Right.
So who owns the copyright? Is it the Walt Disney Company, Inc.? So it depends on who owns.
I would think he's a registered trademark.
Well, trademark, but copyright's different than trademark.
Yeah, but I think he's a registered trademark, so because it's, you know, going all the way back
to... Well, he's both.
Yeah.
They've copyrighted the character. Yep. They've trademarked the character.
Oh, yes, both, because of the merchandising.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, so it would be both.
1976 was the last amendment to the Copyright Act. So as soon as he gets close to being out of copyright again, well, we'll probably see the Copyright Act change again.
Exactly. Now, as an author, that makes me happy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a problem with what's being called orphan works. Google got in trouble a year or two ago for scanning books.
Right.
And they wanted to scan them, put them online for people to access. Many authors and modern-day authors have found that by putting out their book for free, they sell more paper books.
Right.
Or even electronic books. Cory Doctorow is probably one of the biggest proponents of that. And so Google was scanning all these old books where the copyright holder isn't known, and so there's no one to pay the copyright to.
Right.
So they thought they would scan it, but the Writers Guild of America sued them and got them to stop because probably they didn't pay the WGA enough.
Yeah, right. I used to... provide a bunch of old-time radio shows that were clearly out of copyright. The copyright owner no longer existed. They were out of copyright as the laws were at the time. And so I was providing them, and I had this guy who wrote to me and said he owned the copyright to The Shadow.
The original radio drama from the 20s, was it?
The original radio dramas, and that I was in violation of copyright. So I wrote back and said, certainly provide me with documentation that this is true, and I will gladly take them down. Because I had written to Street and Smith, who owned the original copyright. They did not reply to me. I wrote to whoever got the copyright after them. I can't remember who that was. It wasn't Fawcett Pinnacle? I don't remember.
I'm looking.
I don't remember.
There was the 1994 movie with one of the Baldwins. So somebody knew who owned it then.
Right, but nobody ever responded to me. But this guy kept writing to me. He wasn't with Street and Smith. He wasn't with whoever it was after that. So I kept saying, give me documentation and I will gladly take it down. I had my lawyer write to him and say, give me documentation. Mm-hmm. But he just kept yelling and yelling and yelling at me, and I finally just started ignoring him. He never sued me, never did anything.
Because he's probably just trying to
later, he had all the same files that I was delivering for free, mm-hmm. only he was selling them.
Oh.
Yeah, so, okay.
Sue him.
Somebody's got the copyright right now, but
he could have sued you for restraint of trade.
Which has nothing
to do with for copyright.
Right.
You're giving it away for free. He's selling it. You're restraining his trade.
I apparently was. But as it turns out, I took those down a long time ago anyway because...
Yeah, what were you doing? 4 terabytes a day?
Seven.
7 terabytes a day.
I enjoyed those.
I love them. Yep. I've still got a bunch of them. It's legal for me to have them.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are out of copyright, so it's legal for me to give them to other people.
When I was a kid, I used to hide under the covers listening to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Oh, yeah. But that's a lot of what I listen to. So I'll be getting one of those 128 gig cards so I can put a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, oh, that'd be sweet.
And listen. But I'll tell you what, it's hard to find copyright sometimes. Because I was diligent. I looked for copyright for every every series. And not obviously every individual file, but every series that I put out. And some of them, it's real easy to see the copyright expired in X. The company went out of business in Y or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Is. Some of them, man, you couldn't tell with a gun to your head when copyright expired. So some of those I just didn't put up.
Yeah.
Others I thought, you know, they're 60, 70 years old. Probably it's okay. But yeah, it's hard to know about copyright because now, of course, there are databases online that help with that.
Yep.
And of course, there's always the Wikipedia. But back then, wasn't so obvious.
Well, it's almost the Shadow's birthday. It first aired on CBS on July 31st, 1930.
Yep.
Happy birthday, Shadow.
Happy birthday, Shadow.
Batman's birthday this month, too. 75. Yep. So he must be falling out of copyright.
I'll bet somebody somewhere renewed him.
That's why... What's the studio doing the Spider-Man movies?
Sony, isn't it?
That's why they keep rebooting the same Spider-Man plot again and again. That's the only story they have... They own the copyright to.
Right.
And if they don't make a movie, they lose it and it reverts back to Marvel.
Right.
So they have to make the same movie over and over and over again.
Oh, at some point, people are going to get tired of the same movie.
Yeah, just different characters.
Yeah, right.
Uh-oh. Okay, I understand that Osborn was the green...
Goblin.
Goblin.
Yep.
Why does his son have to be it too, you know?
Because he wasn't the...
Because all the toys
the
were there.
No, he wasn't in the books.
Well, yeah, but...
His son was the Green Goblin.
Yep.
But they rebooted it now so that all the bad guys are going to come out of Osborn Corp.
Yeah.
Which is kind of just stupid in my view.
Is that like, Beowulf's mother? Grendel. You kill Grendel and Grendel's mother comes out, played by Angelina Jolie in the last movie.
Which was okay in my book, but... Yeah. It's...
How far back is Beowulf go? That's 3,000 years old, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that, absolutely. It's a...
Quick, who can Google it first?
Yeah, right. It's Old English, and sometime in the... Somewhere between the 8th and 11th century, so... somewhere in the 700s to the 1000s. It was written. It's an old English
only
poem.
Only 1,000 years old.
Yeah. What? I gotta tell you. If I got a minute? Okay. Yeah. Got a half a minute. I did a show where the first person out on stage quoted some Middle English. One day during performance, I was directing and I wrote it and directed it. The guy came out and recited Old English. He started reciting Beowulf. I laughed because I thought it was funny. Then I laughed harder because I realized I was the only guy in the audience who got it. And he did it specifically for me. All right, is this it? We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer and old English show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, before we go back to the phones, a little Middle English. Juan de Tapriel with the Shota Sota, the Drogt of Marches, but never mind. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Yeah, hi, guys. I loved that Beowulf movie from 2007, by the way, personally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thought that was totally awesome. My question, boy, I'm glad you guys are talking about the copyright thing. It's perfect timing. What I would like, and I know you guys are attorneys and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've been searching online so hard to find some old vintage type photographs that I could just have fun with, not for commercial use. And there's just these endless sites, and there's no way to really determine if these sites aren't taking them from someplace they're not supposed to. So do you have any suggestions? The Commons site, perhaps?
Yeah,
whatever it's called.
Wiki Commons.
Wiki Commons is a good choice for that.
Archive.org.
Archive.org. But again, he's absolutely right. How do you know those are out of copyright?
They usually attribute it if it is.
Right.
There are stock photography places, Pond to Five and Getty Images, and you can buy the rights to use a photo. Now, I've heard really good things about Pond 5 in that they have a flat rate for photos and video clips and whatnot, where you don't have to pay for each use. So you put it like you put a picture on your website, and with most copyright royalties, you have to pay for every view that gets. And some of the stock photo sites give you a flat license where you don't have to pay per view.
One of the things you can do is go to, and Steve can actually put this online, on Wikipedia, if you look for public domain image resources, you will find a list of sites that have that. There's also something called the Free Image Search Tool, or sadly, FIST, which will also show you free images. But even so, they warn you that you really should do a little more research to make sure that you check the copyright status of an image. But there are any number of images that have been pre-checked, and using Wikipedia, the things that are on the Wikipedia sites or the that you find through FIST will in fact be available. Sans copyright.
That's really very helpful. I didn't even think about the Wikipedia because, of course, they would most likely have access to. I mean, considering that they're such a huge site.
Yeah, they do a lot of checking themselves before
exactly.
they post. Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Now, you had mentioned a tribute it. Can you just expand on that briefly? I think Steve mentioned.
Well, what happens with a lot of pictures, especially, is that there'll be an attribution at the end, photographed by or copyright by, and in the Creative Commons there's a license that allows you to use that image for free as long as you attribute it to the original person.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Do you have time for one more quick question?
Yes.
It's kind of a silly one. I don't know how I'm doing it inadvertently on occasion, but I would have use for what looks like an L. It would separate two words on my keyboard, but it's longer than a lowercase L, just a vertical line.
Oh, vertical
sure.
bar. Yeah, that's shift backslash.
Look, yeah, it's shift backslash. It's the key above the enter key.
On most keyboards.
There's a backslash, and above it, that long line.
We call it the pipe character.
And that's exactly what it is. It's a pipe character.
Mine, it looks like two lines that are separated.
Just a hair sometimes, yeah. So
yeah.
Some fonts, there is a tiny separation in the middle. In most fonts, it's a solid line.
Gotcha. And I'm looking at it now. That's it. Because I know I've hit it accidentally, and I had no idea how I did. Awesome. Okay, thanks for your time, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, have fun.
You too. Bye-bye.
And the reason it's called a pipe is because if you are conversant with the Linux or Unix command line, you can use that to take the output from one program and pipe it into the input of another program.
And the broken pipe is the one that's two pieces.
Right.
Sometimes it's called a polon because it's a colon but longer than two dots. I've never heard it called that, but according to Wikipedia,
right, who's so rarely wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Fred, all the way from Chi-Line, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's up?
Hi. I have a question about an older iMac G4 that I'm trying to keep going. I actually have a pair of them, and the one needs a hard drive replacement. I like the G4. iMac because I'm able to swing it around and show my customer the screen when I'm typing in his name and address.
That's what we use one for in our store. It's a cash register and typing center.
That's just about all it does for me is text. So I can replace the hard drive. That's not a problem. My question is, I am unable to read on this G4 the DVD install for some reason. The CDs will read, but my DVD part of the player is not working. And I wondered if you had any suggestions on how I could get the operating system installed on that, because I haven't been able to find a FireWire hard drive that'll boot a Mac in a while.
Right.
Yeah, it'd have to be an old FireWire. When USB won't boot the PowerPC models, you need an Intel model for that. One of the problems might be, and I'm trying to bring up my list of machines, is that some of the iMacs didn't have a DVD-ROM drive in them. They were CD only. And so you can't read DVDs, because that's how old these things can be.
I somehow got Tiger installed on that from that DVD, but
I
had a FireWire hard drive at that time.
The very early operating systems came on CDs. It came on four CDs or one DVD.
Okay.
And so that could have been that way. You can, if you have another working Mac, you can use FireWire Target Mode.
But wouldn't I have to have the operating system on this new internal drive in order to even get into FireWire? Don't I have to restart it?
No, Target Mode is built into the hardware, so you can have an empty drive.
And how do you get into FireWire Target this mode with an empty drive?
Hold the T key down when you turn the computer on, and that turns it into Target Mode, which is, in essence, turns that computer into a FireWire hard drive. And then you plug that into another computer with a working DVD drive and install it on the external hard drive.
Perfect. That's exactly the answer that I needed.
You could also just replace that internal optical drive if you can find a 5 1/4 parallel ATA DVD reader.
Right. That'll be a long search.
Yeah.
There's probably one out there somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you answered my question. That's exactly the answer that I needed. Just hold down the T key, and I'm in.
Yep.
So you hold down the T key on the machine that doesn't...
That you want to turn into a hard drive.
That's right.
Right. And then on the other machine, you boot it up, and you install the OS on the what looks like the external drive.
Yes.
Yep. Well, actually, what I...
Yeah. So on the computer in Target Mode, you get a flashing FireWire logo on the screen to tell you it's in FireWire Target Mode.
Then on the other machine...
You plug it in, and the external hard drive pops up.
So it's an external hard drive, so you now, on that other machine, you install to the external hard drive.
Right. Make sure you pick the right hard drive in your installer.
Yes.
So generally, the FireWire hard drives have a yellow icon.
Right, right.
And the standard internal hard drives look like a silver hard drive.
Well, good. That solves my problem, and I've been agonizing over this for weeks. I should have called sooner.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye bye.
I've run into that a few times. The Mac uses for its hard drive icon a hard drive icon, but it's an internal raw hard drive, and a lot of people don't know what that is anymore.
You're right.
So I said, "Well, just click the hard drive icon. What's that?" The thing that looks like a hard drive. Well, I don't know what a hard drive looks like.
Looks like a hard drive to me.
Yeah, yeah. And
you, a hard drive looks like a flashing light.
And somebody put a lot of effort and detail into making this icon really, really. In fact, I just did the same thing. I zoomed it the wrong way.
I suspect it's actually a picture.
Yeah, it's an icon resource. So I can zoom it up to full size. They even put the text.
Like I said, I suspect somebody just took a picture and converted that into an icon.
Handle the hard drive carefully to avoid damage.
Reading.
I'm reading the picture in the icon.
Yeah.
So it's a 512 by 512 pixel icon that Apple uses on their Retina machines. You need double resolution everything. And so people went to great lengths building a lot of these icons, the shading and the shadowing. So if you've never done this before on your Mac, go into icon view on a window, and in the bottom right corner is a little slider that gives you the size of the icons. Zoom in on some of those icons, and you'll see some amazing things.
Yeah.
The text edit icon has the text of the Here's to the Crazy Ones ad.
Nice.
As soon as the icon loads.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic. From Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Vic. What's up?
Guys, one of the commercials a while back was saying something about a Soundbites app that you could get.
No.
Is there one available for my Kindle Fire? Because I looked on their app store.
No,
I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, there's no Soundbites app. There is a Jazz 90.1 app.
Is that on the Kindle also?
Didn't Rob say that the guy that
yeah,
was
well,
that
but I don't know what the. Well, I don't have an answer for you. We will find out what the current status is of that app and get back to you about it.
But it's on the Jazz 90.1 website, is where the link used to be. They had it for Android and for iOS, so it's possible the Android version might work on the Kindle.
Well, if you just get the Jazz app and listen to that, you'll be listening to us on Saturday.
Right, but it's on the Kindle. It's an Android app. It may not run on the Kindle.
True. Right. We will find out what the status is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You can also use always use the web browser to listen to the live app or listen to the archives in the web browser on the Kindle.
Right. If you want to listen through the Kindle, you can always go to the Jazz 90.1 website and click Listen Live.
Mm-hmm.
That should work. I think that'll work on a Kindle.
Yeah, it should.
And you can always, of course, download, as long as you have a podcasting app on your Kindle, you can always connect into the podcasts on our website at soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you.
Yep. So the
poor Francis, she must have stopped listening like a decade ago.
You know, that's too bad. We couldn't actually find Francis because we got our 25th anniversary coming up.
I know.
And that would be such a hoot to have
bring
on
her
the show.
And have her say, that's Bites with a Y.
Yeah, the only other person that I can honestly say I wish was still around that could be here was what's her face from Second Life. Who passed
Lolly.
Away? Lolly.
Lolly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She did such amazing work in that with a lot of the other folks with the posters and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was such a sweetie.
That was some great
number
stuff.
Of times we talked to her. A few times. There was only a few times we ever talked to her. And because they were so rare, that such a beautiful young lady had to die in such a violent way.
Yep. But we will have more information about our 25th anniversary soon, I hope.
Yeah.
But that is coming up. September 3rd is the actual day.
Yeah.
But we'll probably take one of the weekends around there.
Yeah, around there. But it's coming up so fast. I can't, 4th of July, it's already gone. Cornhill is this weekend. And it's like, where the heck did, 7 months already go? 6 months. The summer is just going by too darn fast. No, that's the problem when you get older.
It's the problem when you get older. I've been old for a long time.
I'm a heck of a lot older than you.
Yeah, that's true. You are. You're old.
Yes, I am.
And that's good. All right.
I've got a big milestone birthday coming up.
Do you? You're going to be 30?
Yeah.
Shut up.
No, what? No,
I'm hitting 50 this year.
Yeah, you
I'm,
are.
I'm getting old.
I feel for you, but I'm sitting.
Yeah, right.
You're feeling something, all right.
Not your pain, that's for sure.
Let me tell you, this is an interesting news item here. Microsoft said it has freed at least 4.7 million infected personal computers from control of cyber crooks in its most successful digital crime-busting operation. In other news, you probably didn't even know that Microsoft does digital crime-busting operations, which interrupted service at an internet services firm last week. The world's largest software maker has also identified at least another 4.7 million infected machines, although many are likely still controlled by cyber fraudsters, according to Microsoft's cybercrime-fighting digital crimes unit. India, followed by Pakistan, Egypt, Brazil, Algeria, and Mexico, have the largest number of infected machines in the first high-profile case involving malware developed outside Eastern Europe. Richard Dominguez-Boscovich, Assistant General Counsel of the unit, said Microsoft would quickly provide government authorities and internet service providers around the world with the IP addresses of infected machines so they can help users remove the virus. Those victims are currently not aware they are infected, Boscovich said. The operation is the most successful of the 10 launched to date by Microsoft's Digital Crime Unit, based on the number of infected machines identified. Microsoft located the compromised PCs by intercepting traffic headed to servers at the Reno, Nevada-based VitalWorks Internet Solutions, which the software maker said criminals used to communicate with compromised PCs through free accounts on its no IP.com service. VitalWorks criticized the way Microsoft handled the operation, saying some 1.8 million of its users lost service for several days. The internet services firm said that it would have been glad to help Microsoft without interrupting service to legitimate users. Microsoft has apologized, blaming a technical error for the disruption, saying service to customers has been restored. The operation, which began on June 30th, that by technical error, they mean some programmer somewhere screwed up. The operation, which began on June 30th under a federal court order, targeted malicious software known as Blotabindi and Genexcus. Just apparently they just throw letters at the screen, see what sticks, which Microsoft said work in similar ways and were written and distributed by developers in Kuwait and Algeria. So how sure are you that you're secure? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That's the only way you can get a copyright on a business or software product name now is just throw letters at the screen.
That's exactly right. there's, you know, because all the good ones are taken. But I think it's interesting, maybe good, but certainly interesting, that Microsoft is working to identify and fix machines that are infected. Apparently, they need a little bit of work in how to do that, but at least they're doing it. All right, we're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. Oh, and with you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. No, it's 42 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we have Joe from
Cheektowaga,
New York, on the line. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
There are really few things that get me more angry than these judges that order these domain seizures. I guess it's, how would you feel if someone went to a judge somewhere and that was kind of clueless about technology and said, we want to seize AskNick.com and Soundbites.org. It's like, and they, since they don't necessarily have a clue about the technical aspects of how the internet is run, that they'll grant their motion, and all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, you're scrambling to tell everybody you know, well, no, you no longer have to go here. I have to set up operations temporarily someplace else. As I recall, even our own federal government wasn't too particularly savvy to this when a while back they seized a domain from a company operating out of Spain, which really had nothing to do with what they were going after people for, we're just going to do this because we think so.
So this goes back to an issue earlier this month. There's a website called noip.com that is basically a redirector for dynamic IPs. If you want to run a web server in your house and don't want to pay for a static IP, you can use this company to give you a name for your dynamic IP. And there's several different companies around that do the same thing. Unfortunately, there were bad guys using that company to spread malware. And so Microsoft got the Justice Department, somebody, to seize that domain, even though many of the other companies using that service were perfectly legitimate. And so more than 20 of these domains got knocked out and basically taken off the internet because a couple of them were sending out spyware. Microsoft has settled with them and regrets any inconvenience caused by the outage. We see this happening all the time. There was a server farm got raided because one company on a shared hosting service was taken down, and so the FBI went in and pulled the computer out of the closet and took down 100 other websites that were on that same physical computer.
There was a guy who had his website taken down because it was serving music. It was music he had written and recorded.
Yep. Falsely reported for DMCA.
Right. He sued them. He sued the government. He sued everybody. He was back up within 24 hours. But,
yeah, I was going to say.
But still, you know, the fact is, here's a DMCA takedown notice. Let's not research this.
You're guilty until proven innocent.
Right, exactly. Murica.
Well, the same thing happens on YouTube all the time, too. Yep. Now, that's a slightly different case because that is a private entity that's just simply policing their own network. But there's an awful lot of very angry people that they include something in their YouTube video, background music or something like that.
Right.
And somebody that thinks they own the copyright to it, they may not even own the copyright to that particular work, and they go, oh, take it down.
And a lot of times that's an automated thing where they're looking for a fingerprint of, it's a program, you know, a bot looking for a fingerprint and automatically files the notice. And sort of YouTube's default position is, okay, we'll take it down until the person complains. But I hear this on Leo's show all the time, where he'll show clips under valid fair use copyright law, but someone complains, they get taken down, and they have very little way to get it put back up. And the appeal process with YouTube is terrible, and then it gets taken down again because it's a bot claiming the copyright infringement.
Right. Well, part of the problem is people don't understand the concept of fair use.
Yeah.
Fair use is much narrower than you think it is. 90% of the time when somebody says, I'm putting this up under fair use, it isn't under fair use.
Yeah. Don't sue me. It's fair use. No, it isn't.
No, it isn't fair use, even a little bit. So there's a lot of issue with that people just don't get. Even if it is legitimately fair use, you can get taken down until you prove otherwise.
And then, as you said, the judges don't quite understand it. And if this site is doing something bad, okay, take it down.
Yeah, they don't understand it.
Well, it's like shutting down an entire street because there's one crack house.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, apparently the cops do that too. They raid the wrong house all the time.
Well, I'm wondering too. Now you're seeing it more and more on the internet. You know, people are, because of their phones and that, taking, you know, clips of incidences and whatever happening. And not really asking these people for permission. They're putting it up there. They're technically opening themselves up to a lawsuit.
Well, there's something about public public performance. No, not public performance. Expectation of privacy. If you take a picture in public, the person in public has no expectation of privacy. You don't need to get the permission. You should anyway, just in case.
Well, we had that issue at RIT when I was still there.
Yeah.
We took a bunch of pictures and a 360 round thing and initially put it up, and then our lawyers told us take it down. Then they told us that we could put it up again. Then they told us we had to take it down again. I don't know where it stands now because I'm not there anymore. I've retired. And the crowd goes wild. But there's an issue with, is that indoor spot public or private?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be private to RIT.
Well, but it's RIT, and it's a school that anybody's allowed to walk through. So is it kind of a public
institution or private?
It's privately owned. Yeah.
Well, that kind of sounds like the Google case about when they went around with their Street View cards.
Right.
Yeah.
They were sniffing the wireless traffic to correlate wireless hotspots with actual geolocation.
Yeah, right, if your radio is broadcasting a signal, I'm not in violation of any law by receiving it. And if your radio happens to be broadcasting your password, that's not my fault.
Right. But the problem is so many of these laws were written before any of this stuff existed, and so many of these judges have no idea about this stuff, so it becomes an issue. I really think what the government needs is to start hiring people who understand both law and technology.
Law and order?
And.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you're going to bring that unicorn out of your closet too, right?
Exactly right.
Good gravy.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, gents.
All right. Sure. Thanks, Joe.
That's a common plot in some of the TV shows where they have an address, you know, 123 Main Street, and they actually go to 132 Main Street.
Right.
Or it's they find something in the attached garage that wasn't in the original search warrant. You didn't have permission to go through that door.
That's the issue with having an open. That's the issue with having an open Wi-Fi. If we live next door to each other and I'm using your Wi-Fi to do something bad, they come and raid you.
Yep. That's what happened.
So that must be why. So yes, you did something kind of dumb by having an open Wi-Fi, but you didn't do anything illegal.
Well, that's So I argue with people about this: breaking and entering. If my front door is unlocked, you didn't break. You just entered.
You
still entered, right. So they always talk about breaking and entering as the crime, but that's two separate crimes.
It's exactly right. It is two separate crimes. But there's also to go back to an earlier question, there's also openclipart.org, which has thousands, tens of thousands of free clip art and pictures and everything else. It's not restricted to just clip art anymore, but openclipart.org. If you're on Google Drive, I think there's an automatic connection to that, but I don't remember that. Listen, that music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often next week. And although you are done with us, do not touch that dial, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And Michael is here. I see he has the larger hammer with him this week, so maybe he'll be able to keep George on track. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Nick Francesco. No, I don't want to thank him. I'm Nick Francesco. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites, and this is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you next week.